gold. So the reason for having these utensils that he says in his word is you're going to pour out drink offerings, and he emphasizes that right here up front at the beginning of the structure of worship. He's telling his people, who at this point don't know a thing about this, he's telling his people, I want you to offer me your drink offerings. And of all the offerings that will be later concerning animals, he starts off with this. And there were various drink offerings that were to be poured out before the Lord at worship services. And I don't want to offend anybody, but I'm going to have to deal with what's honest here. And I'm going to deal with what's honest in the Word of God. And what I'm about to say, I'm dealing honestly with history. And therefore, I can document and prove everything I'm about to say. Much to the chagrin of prohibitionist types, these drink offerings or libation offerings featured real wine. And I'm talking about real fermented alcoholic wine. Now, I know that this is a hot topic among many people who are believers who go to church. But when you're a Bible teacher, you have to be honest with what the scriptures teach. And I cannot do anything except tell you God designed these bowls so that real wine could be poured out to him as an acceptable offering. We're not talking about Welch's grape juice here. We're talking about real wine. And because of the fact that the only thing that's mentioned here is that, I'm going to talk about that for a few minutes. First of all, there's no doubt that this drink offering is an alcoholic drink. And I can prove it to you by Deuteronomy chapter 14. So go over to Deuteronomy chapter 14. In Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 22, here's what we read. Deuteronomy 14, 22. You shall surely tithe all the produce from what you sow, which comes out of your field every year. You shall eat in the presence of the Lord your God at the place where he chooses to establish his name, a tithe of your grain, your new wine, your oil, and the firstborn of your herd and your flock, so that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. If the distance is so great for you that you're not able to bring the tithe, since the place where the Lord your God chooses to set his name is too far away from you when the Lord your God blesses you, then you shall exchange it for money and bind the money in your hand and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. You may spend the money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen, for sheep, or wine, or strong drink, or whatever your heart desires, and there you shall eat in the presence of the Lord your God and rejoice, you and all and your household. Wine and strong drink, you are to offer them as a drink offering in my presence. And there's also, ladies and gentlemen, no doubt that at the communion service that was talked about in the New Testament economy, we call it the Lord's Supper, they are not using Welch's grape juice, they're using wine. I can prove that. That's why Paul said to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 11 that you need to stop getting drunk. He didn't tell him stop drinking wine. He said stop getting drunk. In Acts chapter 2, when the Spirit of God came upon the apostles, the people saw them speaking in languages that they didn't know, and they said, these guys in the morning are drunk with new wine. They're drinking. They're doing something like they're out of their minds. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 18, the apostle Paul says, do not get drunk with wine, but be filled with the Spirit of God. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you do not get drunk on non-alcoholic grape juice. You will not get drunk by guzzling Welch's. You may get gas, but you won't get drunk. And what we're talking here is real wine. Now, I am very much aware of the dangers of drinking an alcoholic beverage. Thousands of lives are ruined by alcohol-related evils every single day. Drunk drivers kill people. 97,000 people die a year in United States alcohol-related cases. The rescue mission agencies are filled with skid row bum alcoholics. I have personally visited drunks and addicts in jail. Families have been torn apart by people who cannot control their drinking. Health has been ruined by people who cannot control their drinking. $40 to $60 billion a year is spent in this country on health-related issues because of addictions. One half of all traffic fatalities involve drugs or alcohol. 1/3 of all suicides and mental problems involve drugs and alcohol. And there's no question that the misuse of alcohol has left a trail of blood across America. And because of the abuse and because of the misuse, many have formed a conclusion that any use of any alcoholic beverage is almost a criminal act. But ladies and gentlemen, what we need to remember is that our perspective of any issue, our perspective of any topic, is not based on those who abuse it. Our perspective of any issue or any topic is based on what the Word of God actually says. I don't base what I believe on the traditions of men. In fact, that's dangerous. We're warned, don't base your faith on the traditions of men. We are basing what we believe on the Word of God, and just because some choose not to believe the Word of God and obey the Scriptures doesn't mean we let them dictate what we think or what we believe. For example, just because people misuse sex, I don't take a prohibition stand against sex. I had a couple that came to me who had talked with a pastor who had some real sex quirks. He'd come up with his positions and said, this is what you can do in marriage. And I'm going, wait a minute. The Word of God doesn't teach that. The Word of God says you're free to enjoy yourself. The bed's undefiled. Be intoxicated with each other's love. What he's telling you isn't right. He may be giving you his convictions, but it doesn't square with the Word. And just because people are out there misusing sex, we don't take a stand against that. Just because people are out there misusing drugs, we don't take a stand and say, now if you get sick, you should never use any drugs. Just because people are misusing guns, we don't take a stand and says you shouldn't have guns. Just because people are misusing a knife, we don't take a stand against knives. Just because some crazies got in a jet airplane and misused that, we don't take a stand and say you shouldn't use an airplane. And here's the hardcore reality, whether you like it or not. For over 1,800 years of the Christian church, real wine used in communion was never a debated issue in any church. In fact, when the English Puritans set out for America, they brought with them 7,560 gallons of wine, and they partook of it as a God-given gift to them, including wine and ale. And what they said was, drunkenness is sinful. But drinking the fruit of the vine and wine is from God. It's a good gift. It's the abuse of it that is of the devil. Now, almost all European believers drink wine, and many of them love the Lord and love the Word. Most of them drink about 2.5 glasses a day. There are many of fine Christians who love the Word of God. But now we bring it to the United States. And those of you that have lived in the United States and been involved in church all your life, notice that we have three views in the United States. One is the view of prohibition, which basically says we should outlaw this. It shouldn't be legal. In fact, they did that back in the 1800s. William Booth of the Salvation Army. He got a guy with him named Billy Sunday. They went on a crusade to make it absolutely illegal to have wine. But of course, that law was overturned in 1933. So then another philosophy propped up called abstention, where you acknowledge that it exists, but you just abstain from it. The Baptists got behind that, the Pentecostals, the Methodists, the Wesleyans, Billy Graham, Jack Van Impe, Charles Stanley, the Mormons. They all promote the abstinence philosophy. And then there was the moderation perspective. Martin Luther, the great reformer, said, I probably like beer and wine way too much. John Calvin said part of his salary was 700 barrels of wine. Part of his salary. Hey, there's something to think about right there. Maybe my new office could be pastor's study and meditation lounge. S. Lewis Johnson, a tremendous Bible exegete, took the moderation perspective. Now listen, hear me out. I'm not interested in changing your convictions tonight. I'm not interested in doing that ever. You have your convictions, you have a right to them. You hold on to them, you keep them before the Lord. But what I'm interested in, and this is where you're not going to change me, is in what exactly the Word of God says about this. And I will not budge one inch from that. And what I understand is every person has a right before God to his or her own convictions. And what we don't have the right to do, ever,